what a pound of rises and the brains upon his shoes. He passed the door a hanging up his pair of jumper boots. They picked him up still in the chute and poured him from his boots.
He ain't gonna jump no more.
Oh,
glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. He ain't gonna jump no more.
Now the letter they sent home went to his wife and baby son. Madam, we regret to say your trooper's life is done. But hold your head up high, his name is written in the sky.
He ain't gonna jump no more.
Oh,
glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die.
He said it.
Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. He ain't gonna jump no more.
Well, welcome back to Zero Block 30. As always, I am Uncle Chaps. We are presented by Barstool Sports, and I am joined by my co-host, who is back from sunny California. Connor, how are you doing, my friend?
Chaps, I am good as always, but let me tell you something. You remember Iraq, Chaps?
Vaguely.
Yeah, you were there. You remember Iraq. Do you remember the feeling when you'd be inside for an extended period of time, potentially when you were sleeping at night, and then you'd come outside, and the first thing to hit you in the morning was that heat, and you would just roll your eyes back and say, shit, I'm still here. That's the kind of heat we're dealing with in New York City today, right now. So, and I was not dealing with that heat in California. There was no humidity out there in beautiful San Diego. So I'm adjusting, but I'm good as always.
It's definitely not cool here in San Antonio either.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it is.
The weather's not exactly good just to go hang outside for a couple hours at a
time. No, not at all.
By any means.
Yeah.
But that being said, I have been doing a shit ton of golfing lately.
Yeah, you told me four of the last 5 days.
Four of the last 5 days,
That's
man.
That's ridiculous.
Because I got the golf course hookup at the military golf course, so I go out there damn near every day. Like, as soon as I'm done with my last blog, I go out there. It's like 2 o'clock. It's hot as shit, but it makes it completely empty.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go and pay for the cart for nine holes. And that's only like, it's like $6 or some shit,
which
like
is
super cheap.
Yeah. That's a steal.
And then I play 3 balls each time.
Yeah. It's great to get your practice in. It's a great way to get your practice playing by yourself.
Yeah. And nobody else wants to go out there.
Yep.
And so that kind of got us talking when we were talking about that. There's a lot of things that you couldn't catch me dead doing now that I would have done no problem when I was in the Marine Corps, not even thought twice about it.
Sure.
One of which is working in incredibly hot temperatures. Now, if I go outside, just imagine, all right, just where you're at in your life right now.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if I pulled you from New York and I was like, hey, Cons, you're going to come back to Texas, and for the summer, you're going to be one of the cart boys at HEB, the local grocery store.
No thanks.
Dude,
no thanks.
I went there the other day. It was like 108. Like, I can't imagine what it's like on the blacktop. And these dudes are soaked pulling in these grocery carts.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you poor, poor sons of bitches. Join the Marine Corps. It'll be easier than what you're doing right now.
That's true. No,
there's
I can remember,
lots of inside jobs, man.
I can remember getting in my car in Texas and the temperature reading 109. And yeah, it was hot, but I guess I was just used to it. Now, with those temperatures, I'd be like, no, I'm just not going outside. No thanks. I'm good inside with my AC. I don't need to deal with that anymore.
And luckily, the course is like mad shaded. There's trees everywhere. And you know, because it's a military course, they have stupid amounts of cooler with water everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hydration is paramount.
Hydrate or die.
There are on a military base.
Yep.
They have the hydration stations everywhere. Nobody's out there, so I'm taking my time hiking through the woods, picking up golf balls. Like, I got, like, so many old balls. Most of them are, like, dry rotted out, but I don't care. If I see it, I'm picking it up and putting it in there. It's miserable, though. It's miserable hot. And then I drive by and I see, when I'm leaving base, it has been a really cool experience seeing a lot of these young troops that are out there, because Lackland, where I live by, is the Air Force basic training.
Mm-hmm.
So I see these dudes, like, marching. They're, like, singing their songs and shit. And I'm like, man, this kind of motivates me to go play a little better round.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, But I feel like you told me, too, the deals are much better when it's a certain temperature, right?
Yeah, and that's for, like, even the civilian golf courses around. Like, there's one by my house that's, like, $120 a round. But if the temperature goes over, like, 105, they drop it down to, like, $25.
That's
unbelievable. Or if it's supposed to get over 105 real field, they'll drop it down.
That's unbelievable. That's almost like that would make me think twice and make me consider playing in that heat just because.
Oh, I did. I did, yeah. On Monday. Yeah. I went out there and played on that on Monday. And it was nice, man. Like, it's a really nice course. Free range balls, GPS in the cart, free cart. They have, like, water bottles in there. I feel like Francis or something.
Yeah. No, that's certainly a nice treat when you have all those nice amenities to deal with the heat with. So I get it. It's worth it, I think, if you can get through a decent round and don't die.
Yeah. But we were talking about, like, I almost did. Like, I felt like there's some days that I come home. Like, I had been home for, like, 2 hours probably, and my wife comes in and she grabs the laundry hamper. And she's like, why are your clothes, like, soaked? Mm. And I was like, oh, I was playing golf today. She's like, that's fucking sweat, you nasty. Like, oh, my
yeah.
God.
You're
like, why would you not just put that in the washing machine?
Yeah, right away. Like, why would you just leave it there on top of all the other clothes, get them all gross?
Well, because I've been married 8 years, and I'm, like, I'm not a separator. So she, like, took laundry privileges away from me early in our marriage, and it wasn't even something that I fought. It's not like we have gender roles in our house, but laundry is just something that I don't touch because if I fucked up her clothes, it would be over with. Like, she would be,
yeah, you'd be dead.
So irate.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
So I don't put anything. I don't touch the laundry thing. If I go in there, I feel like she's going to have laser beams, like, shoot me. Like, it's bad. Like, she will kill me. So I don't put anything in the washer machine ever.
How did that happen? She just, when you got married, she said, oh, by the way, I'm going to do the laundry. Don't ever touch it. Or did you screw something up?
I think it
up?
Was, like, when we were dating, I left, like, a pin. Because, you know, like, whenever you're on active duty, you always have a pin. Like, because I have an MP background, we had pins all the time. Like, had to. Mm-hmm. Like, to write somebody up or whatever.
Oh, a pen. I thought you were saying pin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, pen. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You always have at least one pen on you. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would always forget it, and then I would end up in the washing machine and fuck up some clothes. Cause mm-hmm. There'd be. So when we first got married, we had a different washing machine. I washed it and dried a pen, and, like, the pen, like, basically exploded everywhere inside the washer. So from that point forward, she was just like, absolutely not. You are never going to.
And was that what this was that talking to you that you received worse than anything you received while you were in the military?
I'm more scared of my wife than I have been of any leader I've ever had. Because any leader comes down to it, like, that I've ever had, I thought, like, if we went, like, hand-to-hand combat, I could probably hold my own. But
sure.
I would never hit my wife ever, no matter what happened. So I think she would take me in a fight, too. Like,
and I mean, you know, I've yet to have the pleasure of meeting your wife, and I've only experienced her through a little bit of social media. But, I mean, if your daughter McCartney gets any of her spunk from your wife, then I think I might be afraid of your wife, too.
It's exactly where she gets it from.
Yeah.
Like, she looks like my wife. She acts like my wife. She basically is going to be, like, exactly like my wife whenever she grows up. And
yeah.
God help the dude. That's why I know, like, you know, a lot of dads are like, I don't know if the guy is going to be good enough for my daughter.
Yeah.
If he could put up with McCartney.
He's good enough.
Consistently, then he's probably pretty tough.
Yeah, and I think we've said this before on the show, but, man, military spouses, and, you know, sometimes it's not always a female, you know, and males as well. They are some of the toughest people around to be married to somebody in the military. I think it's just incredible, and I'm thinking of my buddies who are married in the military and their wives and what they have to deal with, the separation and running a household and raising children. It truly is impressive what they do.
Yeah, because I always feel bad whenever I have to go out of town and go to New York and mm-hmm. leave my wife here with the kids now, but it's only, like, at most 5 or 6 days.
Sure.
Like, these people are doing 7-8 months, man. Like, 14 months with only, like, 10 days back. That's a long, long time. I couldn't even imagine. Like, God. Like, your wife can go on a deployment, your husband can go on a deployment. That's fucking tough, dude.
Yeah. And I've always said the hardest part for me leaving on my deployment, you know, it was very hard to say goodbye to my family. But then I said goodbye to them when I was still in New Jersey on pre-deployment leave. And then I got back and I didn't leave for another week. So I got to say goodbye to them finally on the phone. But then day of when we're actually leaving and watching guys say goodbye to their wives and children, that was harder for me than saying goodbye to my own family.
Oh, yeah, man. And you know what else is really tough to say goodbye to?
What's that?
The Dunkin' Energy Punch whenever it actually leaves. The Dunkin' Energy Punch is an absolutely terrific little slice of heaven. I love drinking them. People are like, Chaps, your heart. Don't worry about my fucking heart. I've been through worse. My heart will make it through a Dunkin' Energy Punch, and it has every single day this week because I crush my day with my new Dunkin' Energy Punch. It's powered by Monster. It comes in blue raspberry or strawberry. It's the electrifying combination of Monster Energy Drink and that delicious, delicious Dunkin' goodness that we've all come to love. It's only available at Dunkin'. It's only available for a limited time. Prices and participation may vary, and it's a limited time offer. I can't stress that enough. If you want it, you got to go get it now, man. You got to go get it now. Because I pulled up to my local Dunkin' today, just today.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it on the menu because they hadn't switched over one side. It, like, flopped in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
So it was there. It wasn't there. And then the wind blew again, and it came back. I thought I had another heart attack.
I was going to say your heart was all flutter.
Energy Punch was going to go. But it didn't. Dunkin' Energy Punch is here for a while. I personally like, I can't decide which one I like the best. Sometimes it's strawberry, sometimes it's raspberry. Just get one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Get them both every single day.
Just get them both flavors.
Crush your day with a new Dunkin' Energy Punch. We are finishing up Band of Brothers, man.
Oof. Hold on. Before you say anything, just overall, if you had to describe the entire series in one word, what would you give me?
Ish. Oh, fuck. That's it.
That works.
Yeah. So write that on the social part. I feel like it's something that it's just so weighty that it's even hard to kind of wrap your mind around all the things that really happened. And they had some lines in the end that I wanted to touch on that really goes to show, man. Like, these guys were going in there thinking that they were going to be in a battle for a couple days, couple weeks, kind of like what we thought in Iraq. And the next thing you know, it's some of the hardest combat that Americans has ever seen. And they don't leave until D-Day plus 4-3-4.
That's unbelievable, man. Just not knowing. Not knowing.
The amount of people that they saw dead, like all the things that they went through, just absolutely incredible.
The one word I would use would be powerful because of all the things that you just said. Because you're watching it, and then you catch yourself reminding yourself that these are based on actual events. These men lived this life. They went through these battles. How did they survive? How did they just continue to fight on when there was no end in sight? Because you know, too, Chaps, in the military, it's like a bad game of telephone. You know, when the orders come down from the top, you know, then maybe you hear something different. And then by the time you, as a young soldier, you might hear something, geez, it could be completely different from the truth. And that's why it's so important to give accurate information as a leader. But
I want to stop you because we're going to get that. That is one of the main points, I think, of episode 10.
Okay. Yep.
So I want to start off by saying I fucking loved it when they were looking for the chicken eggs at the beginning of episode 9.
Yep.
Because my drill instructors, man, if you took your Kevlar. Oh, hell yeah. I think my tequila shipment just got here.
Good for you.
I don't know if you can hear the doorbell or not, but I think that's my tequila.
We're happy for you.
You'll have to chop this out. Here we go. Back into it. So I fucking loved it when my drill instructors would make fun of somebody. First of all, Army, do you guys call your helmets or do you call them Kevlars?
Kevlars.
Okay. Same with us. So we would call our Kevlar. If you were seen holding your Kevlar by the straps, without fail, a drill instructor would be like, "Hen, are you? Is that a fucking Easter basket?" Like, without fail, every single time. And it's one thing that stuck no matter how long you're in the Marine Corps. If I saw my Marines do it, I'd be like, "Hey, they're a fucking dummy. Is that a goddamn Easter basket or a fucking Kevlar?"
That's
Put
fantastic.
It on your grape or tuck it under your arm. Like, it's one of the two. It's not an Easter basket.
Yep.
So he was putting in eggs. The only thing I could think of, it is a fucking Easter basket.
I guess it is. Sure as shit. It used to be an Easter basket.
Because it had like the straw and shit coming out of there.
Right, and he's like picking it out. Meanwhile, the other guy's trying to get sweet on the German girl. Because
yeah,
they were
and
just...
I feel like that is a tale as old as time.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in a combat zone, if you've been away from the opposite sex for a long time, same sex if that's what you're into, if you've been away from that for a long time, the moment that you first see a female or anybody else, you are going to be horny as all hell. Like, it's just how it goes down.
Yeah, there's a reason. There's a reason there are children in Iraq who have blonde hair and very fair skin. So, take that for what it is.
They don't look like they belong, and it's the same, it was the same way in Vietnam, the same way in Korea,
yep.
And they blended in a little bit more with the Germans, but...
No, but that was great. I mean, they were just... At that point, though, they were just kind of like biding their time, you know, and they didn't have much to do, and then obviously they go out on that patrol when they get to the new village. Winters sends them out on that patrol, and what they find is harrowing, to say the least.
Yeah, no doubt. And also the fact that the dude jumped up in the middle of doing it after not being able to do it for like 300 days or so and just jumps off and busts out a salute. I thought that was awesome, too.
That's a young Tom Hardy looking very skinny, and I did his salute.
Oh,
was,
I didn't even realize that was
yep.
Tom Hardy.
Oh, well, because he's so skinny, so you wouldn't even recognize him. But his salute was so ate up. I don't know if
Man,
you noticed
you know
that.
Why I probably didn't recognize him?
Why not? Why is that?
Because I wasn't wearing my Warby Harpers that I just got recently.
Your Warby
Parkers. My Warby Harpers are amazing, man. These glasses are unbelievable. They are aesthetically pleasing and a vintage and style inspired with a contemporary twist. Every pair is custom with anti-reflective polycarbonate prescription lenses. You know how I knew which ones I was going to look dynamic in, Connor?
What's that? Which ones?
I knew I was going to look dynamic in the ones that I picked because they have an amazing free home try-on program where you can order 5 pairs of glasses, try on all 5 of them for 5 days. There's no obligation to buy. It ships free and includes a prepaid return shipping label. Head to warbyparker.com/chaps to order free try-on today. The glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses. That's hard to beat anywhere. Mm-hmm. The lenses include an anti-glare, anti-scratch coating. For every pair you buy, a pair is distributed to somebody in need. On Zero Block 30, we like to give back to those in need. Buy your glasses at Warby Parker, and you'll do just that. You can go to their Warby Parker iTunes app, going through the site, still using our code of warbyparker.com/chaps to make sure you get the deal. You can go get the iTunes app. It'll even show you what you look like in those. And you get the home try-on kit free as part of your experience. I'm going to tell you what I did because my daughter liked to have a fashion show, a little bit of a fashion show. I tried on all of them. She told me which one that I looked handsome in. I looked handsome in all 5.
No surprise there.
Yeah, kept 3 of them, sent 2 back, and it was easy. Very, very easy. WarbyParker.com/chaps. Saluting while you're naked.
Yeah, that is that's something. He's just not dropping his military bearing.
Now, so. Marines, we only salute with a cover on, with a hat on.
Yeah, I mean, he should not. I mean, he was inside. 2, he was, you know, buck naked. So there really was no reason for him to be saluting.
But I noticed that throughout several other parts of the show where, like, indoors, like when Winter goes to the 2-star general, he salutes indoors without a cover on.
Right.
Is that normal or no?
No, that is normal. In certain circumstances, in that case, if you were reporting to a general's office, you would salute indoors as a sign of respect. But more often than not, indoors, you're no salutes.
We only do it if you're indoors, under arms, with a cover on, or if you weren't, you could just be wearing a duty belt. A duty belt technically counts as you're being under arms. Other than that, only whenever you're wearing a cover.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of guys just running out of stuff to do, it seemed like Nick's in this episode, he's like really starting to lose faith, and he's getting really depressed. I mean, Winters tells him he's demoted, and he's like, man. Whatever. And then he gets the letter that his wife's divorcing him. And I thought you would take special notice of the one part where he's just yelling out, she's taking the dog. She doesn't even like that dog. That's my dog. She's taking the dog.
Yep. R.I.P. to Carl, man.
But that's, Carl. I mean, it's a slower process back then, but that's tale as old as time. Like, guys will get emails now that, like, their wife is leaving them for whatever reason.
And a lot of it's because what we talked about earlier. It's incredibly difficult to maintain a level of intimacy after being gone for... They had been gone over a year at that point. And what she had seen about D-Day, and I'm sure the battle in the European theater period, probably losing faith that he's even going to come back at all.
Exactly.
But before we move further, I want to backtrack just a little bit. Whenever the dude is sending home these crazy candlesticks, he's home all kinds of stuff. If you were able to take home anything that you saw while you were in Iraq, what would have it been?
Probably my dog.
I need to tell you something.
What's that?
Have I told you before that if you were with me, I would have shot your dog?
No, that's the first time. Why?
Because they can't be around our dogs because they're not vaccinated, and the zoonotic diseases there are very, very easily to transport. So anytime, think about this. Anytime that I was anywhere, think about what the landscape of Iraq looked like and how many wild dogs are there.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there was wild dogs, unless it would cause us to give up our position, like under the cover of darkness,
mm-hmm.
I was required to be the one who shot the other dogs.
That's a tough job to have. That's not fun.
Yeah, not good, man.
No.
It doesn't, like, you're going over there to win hearts and minds.
Right,
and
you're like, shooting dogs, innocent dogs.
I'm going to roll up to this village and then just shoot like 20 dogs.
Yeah. That, because, I mean, they're so, what people don't realize is.
And they made the dog handlers do it, who obviously like dogs.
Yeah, you guys have a special spot in your special place in your heart for dogs. So that is added pressure there. But what people need to understand is there's so many dogs. Dogs are almost like squirrels over there. They're all over the place. They're obviously
wild. They
all
look exactly the same.
They look the same. A bunch of mutts. They carry diseases. So I get it. We never brought him into our compound or anything, but he was just always right outside. So, you know, we'd give him food and water and things of that nature. But to be honest with you, just by the nature of where I was in Iraq, I was in remote villages and then I was on the border. There was nothing I ever really saw to where I was like, oh, that'd be cool if I could take it home. So I can't think of anything off the top of my head besides, like I said, the dog. But why? Was there something that you would have liked to have taken home?
Oh, yeah, stacks of cash, dude.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. No, yeah, I saw cash
everywhere.
I saw
some
cash.
Some of the older motorcycles would have been awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that would have been really dope.
Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, those guys were cleaning up in World War II. I mean, they were sending home.
Like, getting Hitler's cutlery, in episode 10.
Yeah.
All that. Oh, my God.
All the silverware.
I can't wait to talk about the booze part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I figured you
Nixon
would.
Nixon is like, Nixon, like what you're saying, Nixon turns into just a booze hound. All he cares about is booze. He's just trying to drink his life away, which is great. One of the underrated things about this show, PTSD awareness wasn't really a thing in 2001 when this show came out, because September 11th hadn't even happened whenever they made
it. When they made it, right.
Made it.
Yep.
So they didn't have that in the back of their mind that they're going to show what soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen are going to go through for the next 15 years. They had no clue, but they showed different levels of PTSD and the different ways that it can manifest itself. And the ways that Nixon's did was through alcoholism. He just became just a vicious alcoholic.
Well, and I
functioning,
think...
Functioning, though, too.
No,
and
completely
that's how a lot of vets
functioning.
Are, functioning alcoholics.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that led him to that is what he says to Winters. He's like, do you know I have never fired my weapon in theater? And he's like, even with all the action we've seen, he's like, not a single bullet. So he's away from his wife, away from home, in a dangerous spot every day of his life. And it probably almost felt at times that he wasn't contributing. Obviously, he played an important role with intelligence and operations, but I could see how you almost feel useless and there's no end in sight. So you almost feel like, what is the point? So let me just get drunk every day. I get it. And then you get a letter that says your wife is leaving you and she's taking the damn dog.
Yeah, you just don't have a whole lot to look forward to when you're in that position. And you're like, you think, especially where they were at that time, they had been, I think it's almost an episode and a half, and a lot of things happened in between those where they thought the war was over, but they keep going on missions. People keep turning up dead. And it's just like, when is this going to end, man?
And you made a great point.
It didn't seem like it ever was.
No, you're right. And you made a great point right there. You just said he had nothing to look forward to. I will tell you, as I got closer to the end of my deployment, and I'm sure you did the same thing as many guys do, you have plans and you have things that you're looking forward to, and it keeps your spirits on those dog days and the tail end of a deployment. But these guys, they didn't have that because they didn't know what the hell was coming next. So to maintain morale, I mean, they go to that one fighting position, the sergeant and the young private who was eager to see action. He's like, dude, I haven't been home in over 2 years. Like, I don't want to see any more action. I've been shot at enough. Relax. And you could see it manifest itself in that sergeant, that he just, the fire in their bellies was starting to go out, and it was trying, and understandably so, considering what they had been through.
Yep. And what I did like about that is that scene, and then the next really corresponding scene to that is whenever they stumble upon what they didn't even know was a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into, he has experienced this amount of war, this amount of conflict, and he is so concerned about what he sees in the state of humanity that he runs back to find any officer that he can report it to. So his level of humanity was still there and still strong, that he knew something was drastically, drastically wrong. And this is a grapevine thing. It is amazing to me, and I wonder how historically accurate this is, that they had been fighting in Germany and mm-hmm. the surrounding areas for a year and didn't know about concentration camps.
They walked up on it. They're like, we found something, but
you
we
know
have-
more about World War II history. Is that historically accurate?
I believe it is, yes, because the Germans kept them in such places that they weren't actually fighting the battles.
But you would think with overhead surveillance, I mean, obviously, our wars are different. We know exactly what's going on basically everywhere.
Right. And I'm not saying that nobody had a clue, but I'm saying it's not surprising, and I believe it is historically accurate, that the 101st didn't have a clue that these existed. Because, why would they need to be told that these camps exist, right? That doesn't.
Because even Winters and the colonel even looked surprised.
Yeah.
And if anybody would have known, you would have think the colonel would have known.
Exactly. But they spent the entire time in World War II on the front line, so they would have no idea what's going on this far behind the line. So the general bewilderment, I think, is accurate. And then, I mean, they're just human beings, so they're seeing these other human beings at a state that no human should ever have to experience. So that was very trying on them, and I think you saw it when Winters opens the rail car and there are just bodies, dead bodies, stacked on one another, and it is very evident, to me at least, it looked very evident that he was fighting back tears because he didn't know what to do. And then these you see these people, and you want to help them. You can obviously see that they're on the brink of death, and you want to help them, but you don't know what to do. It was really, really powerful. And then when you contextualize it at the end of the episode, and they give you the numbers, you can't wrap your brain around it.
That part was when Winters opened up the door and he could see that part was really powerful. And then when the older gentleman just comes up and starts kissing the sergeant on the cheeks and saying, thank you. That reminded me of some experience that we saw. And Nixon wondering if we had any point in the war. The sergeant going through while he was in the fighting position, wondering if they had done anything worthwhile. A year of combat and he's just sick of it. And then this moment happens. And it's almost like a point of clarity for them that something was so horrific that this is something that we absolutely needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
They had those moments. I think as like a veteran of Fallujah, I had that kind of moment, not nearly to the same degree, but being in the city when girls were allowed to go to the school the first time to get an education, watching mothers walk their girls to school. That's why the fall of Fallujah to ISIS was so painful. Because it was one of the things that I could tangibly wrap my brain around, like this war in Iraq was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Once Iraq fell to ISIS, it was like a fresh new can of war or wounds was opened again. Like everything that I went through, everything my friends went through, it didn't mean a whole lot. The guys in World War II, they never really experienced that, I don't think. They knew that told basically their entire lives that they saved the world, which they did.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, we didn't get a chance to say we saved the world.
We have that in common with the Vietnam and the Korean veterans, too.
Although,
World War II was really the last time that it's like you swept through everything, you saved the world.
Yeah, and then it was probably extremely fulfilling for them to see that they had done some good. But I'll show you a quick story from my own experiences in Iraq. When I was out there on the border and we had secured some space and made an area much more safe so that a school is able to be rebuilt, and I remember going to the village one last time, and there was a little boy, and I have a really nice picture, actually. I'll share it with everybody. And the little boy, I'm getting ready to leave, and he tugs on my leg, And I don't know if you, the little kids over there, they obviously they know very little English, but he says, Mister, Mister. Mm-hmm. And I bend down, and then I hear, you know, his father whispers something in his ear, and then he just looks at me, this little kid, he's probably, I don't know, 3 or 4, and he says, thank you, and, like, gives me a hug. And I was like, mm-hmm. wow. All right. Now, this was worth it. So, for them, these guys in World War II to liberate these camps, I can relate on a very small scale on what that must have felt like.
All right. I know you live in New York, which is the most expensive city in the world, one of the most expensive, top five at least. But how much do you think it would cost on Airbnb to rent out the Eagle's Nest?
Dude.
How dope would that be?
That would be sick. I mean, but
put
like,
it on the card.
Yo, get Brett over here. Brett, you got that? You
send
got that company
me a
card?
Con to the Eagle's Nest. And that place is fucking beautiful. Weird situation because the place is immaculate, the gold elevator going up and mm-hmm. what have you. These dudes didn't give a fuck. Was that Hitler's body in there?
No. That was some German officer.
Okay, because it looked like it said Adolf Hitler on the sleeve.
Oh, no. That was just some
okay.
officer. Yeah.
Well, that makes more sense. I thought they were just like, huh, there's Hitler. Fuck it.
Yeah, no. Like, no. But yeah, gosh almighty. What a gorgeous country, though, too. That they had holed up in. And then the Eagle's Nest was just certainly impressive. And I always found it ironic that they built it way up top in this mountain, and Hitler was supposedly afraid of heights, but just gorgeous that they were able to liberate that. And that was important to them. And they say that they were chomping at the bit, that they didn't want the French to get there first. They said,
oh, no, dude. You got to do that, man.
Yep.
After everything you get, that's like capture the flag times fucking a million.
Yeah. There's like, we've been through hell and back across Europe. We're going to be the ones to liberate the goddamn Eagle's Nest.
If I'm that close to the Eagle's Nest and I know what it represents, you'd have to shoot me not to make me go. Like, they're just
right.
hanging out, like, blowing up grenades and shit. I'd be, like, running up that hill to go down it.
No, I absolutely
also,
agree.
The liquor cabinet that he had.
What kind of fancy boy video could you do with that?
Dude, all kind. I'd be doing the fanciest. I'd be so drunk. There is I would love to just grab some of that champagne, head down to the shore with Major Winners. But I was concerned with Major Winners. One thing
What's,
out there. What,
what?
Do you know what it is?
No, I don't. Maybe because he wasn't swimming with a buddy?
No, I was concerned because Major Winners, he's kind of a redhead. And he wasn't wearing a swim shirt. He should have been wearing a swim shirt. And if you think you need to wear a swim shirt, you can go to the ZBT store on barstoolsports.com because there's now swim shirts in the ZBT section, man. I just go in there. We have a salmon one. We have a blue one. Don't get sunburned. Major Winters is a fair-skinned guy. He made it through, but melanoma has gotten bad through global warming. He was okay in the 40s. I'm sure that if he was a modern-day leader, he would take his skin very sensitive, very, very seriously because, Cons, as you know, I'm sure you've threatened, as a military member, your skin belongs to the government as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you abuse it, you can be charged under the UCMJ.
Yeah, that's a little-known fact. And some guys have to learn that one the hard way.
Yeah, man, you can get charged for getting a fucking sunburn.
Which is wild. But anyway, no, that was a gorgeous lake he was swimming in. It just everything about that last episode, it just seemed like everything was very picturesque and very beautiful.
It was. I would love to, I mean, in all seriousness, that would be a great place to go vacation, go to a history spot.
Yeah.
Just the picture, the real life picture of them in the Eagle's Nest is.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. That's unbelievable. And they're just chilling out, drinking booze, celebrating VE Day. What kind of feelings must wash over you when you finally hear we did it?
I thought that was interesting too because there were several parts I think in episode 2 and then again in episode 6 when they tell them that they're moving on to a different area.
Mm-hmm.
The response is cheering and just like they're getting drunk, smashing beers together. And this one, it was a little more somber. They
yes.
just kind of throw their
yes.
arms around and walk back to the cabin because they know this is finality. Hitler's dead. Japan surrendered. The war is finally fucking over.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I loved about the show was how it ended, like at least the theatrical portion of it, with Major Winters going through job by job of what the guys did
yeah.
after.
Yeah, and you know what's so impressive about that? You know, you think, like, I would say all of their lives, take money out of the equation, every single one of those guys was successful in one way or another, and they led a fulfilling life after they got done fighting this war that saved the world.
And it's a great, representation of what America's military really is. You have Buck, who went on to be a lawyer. You have a taxi driver. You had a construction worker, a train operator, a writer, a glass-making executive, and an administrator in a school system. That covers basically every gamut of life that you possibly can.
Yep. And it was amazing that they all accomplished exactly what they wanted to accomplish. And they had that freedom to do that, to go home and be set up to make a nice life for themselves. And it seemed like, for the most part, they all did.
And it was amazing to me, not when I was listening, when the guy who's a taxi driver was like, I can't wait to go back here because all the Navy boys coming into port are going to be big money for the taxi driver.
Yep.
And in your head, you're thinking somebody who's an easy company of the greatest part of the European theater, or the most, probably the most well-known part of the European theater, all he's thinking about is being a taxi driver.
Yeah, like you're so happy
like
about
you would
that.
Think that you would have like much bigger aspirations, but he's just like, I'm going to be racking it up, dude. Get me a nice little Jewish girl with a nice smile. Get me a big ass house. I'm going to be set just driving my cab.
And the Jewish like woman that, has to have
that
big bosoms.
That was the American dream.
Yeah. No, that Jewish woman with the big bosoms.
Pillowy.
Pillowy, yes. That was the right word to describe. A couple of things that stood out for me in episode 10 that I really liked, though, too, were the traditions and the honor and respect that they showed the Germans, even during surrender.
Letting the general keep his weapon.
He's like, you may keep your sidearm. And then, you know, he salutes Major Winters. Major Winters returns the salute, and it was just very formal and very professional. I was always impressed by that. By the way, what did you think of the Army uniforms, how they used to be, like with all the khaki and browns? Because I think they look sharp, more so than our Army uniforms these days.
I liked them. They're all right.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're no dress blues, but let's be real.
This is true. No, I'll give you guys. You guys got better uniforms than us. I'll admit to that. But and then in terms of, you know, going back to what we were saying about, you know, what these guys did after the war, and obviously they pick Shifty to win that lottery to go home first, and he goes out to Major Winters on the terrace, and he's having a chat with him and saying thank you for everything. And he says, you know, I just don't know how I'm going to explain all of this to folks back at home. And, you know, Major Winters just says, you know, you're one fine soldier. There's nothing more that needs to be said. But that is a burden that I'm sure a lot of them dealt with. The fact that how do you describe, because again, obviously there were newsreels and things of that nature, but back then, how do you describe those experiences short of being there?
I don't think you can. I mean, just like ours, like we try every week on the podcast to try to give a glimpse into what it's like, but it's hard. And I don't even think the people who are going through it realize what they did or what people are doing now. Like you just don't. It's not something that you can really wrap your head around.
Right. And I think the German general, when he's addressing his men, when he surrenders to Donnie Wahlberg, second lieutenant at that point, but he says, it's a bond. The bond we formed is a bond you can only form in combat. And I think that's so true. You know, obviously you form a bond in various facets of your life and in various organizations, but the bond you form in combat alongside your brothers is unlike anything else.
Without question. No doubt it is. All right. So I think next week we'll do a full save round. Alibis about the show where we can talk about anything we want to.
Okay, but one thing we can't gloss over, because, I mean, you made it a point to tell me about it. Your old boy Ross made an appearance in episode 10.
This motherfucker, dude. Yes! God, I'm so glad you brought that up. When oh my God, I love this line so much, too, because it's just the cockiest fucking thing.
Yep.
When Winters, because everybody remembers, what's his real name?
Sobel.
What's
Sobel?
Sobel, a fucking dickhead. And as a training guy, training officer, was an asshole to Winters, put Winters through the fucking ringer. It happened to me where I passed up people who were dickheads to me growing up through the Marine Corps, where when I got to the school as the lead instructor for the Marines, there was people who were cocks to me when I was coming up through the ranks that I wanted so bad to take out what they had put in on me, but I knew deep down inside that they were kind of doing what they were supposed to do, even if they went to a whole nother level. Winters doesn't even do that. He just, when Sobel's passing, Sobel just says, "Major Winters." And he just stops him. He says, "Captain Sobel," addressing him by his rank while he's a junior person to him, which usually, typically, a little bit different in the officer ranks, but typically if somebody's junior, you just address them by their last name.
Right, right.
He makes it a point to say, "Captain Sobel,
yep,
we salute the rank, not the man." Like, I know you know who I am. I know you know what rank I am. And I know that you are going to render me a salute and you're going to do it right fucking now. But said it the most polite way possible.
Polite, professional.
Stood up on my couch. I was like, "Get it! Yeah, bitch! Fuck you, Sobel, you fucking cunt."
Oh, man. But that is really probably one of the best parts of the whole series. Because, like I said, he just did it in such a professional manner. And you know,
shit, like, you know, he ate shit. Whenever.
Yeah.
He saluted him and ate shit the entire time.
Exactly.
His fingers extended, joint, his thumb was along the hand.
Yep. Absolutely. Oh, so good. So good. Just overall, though, man. But you know what? I think we can't go without mentioning the last lines that were said when Dick Winters, the actual Dick Winters. Oh, and by the way, did you notice? I told you it was going to happen.
Yeah,
they had all their names.
Yeah, they put all the names up.
Yep,
loved it.
Yep, I know you were going to love that. But then they asked, or Major Winters is the last guy talking, and he reminds him of the letter his grandson wrote him. And he said, "Grandpa, were you a hero in the war?" And Grandpa said, "No, but I fought amongst a company of them." I mean,
Amazing. That's
Chill City. That's tears.
And
I
then
mean,
his lip starts quivering.
Yeah.
Mine did too.
Oh, mine did too.
Works. I was like, I wish he was still alive so I could give him a big ass hug.
Yeah.
That being said, last week I saw a dude who has fought in World War II. He had a World War II hat on. These guys wear their hats all the time. They wear them with pride, as they absolutely should. Korean War veterans, Vietnam veterans. If you see these dudes, especially the old ones in the World War II in Korea, give them a fucking hug and tell them thankful for their service. They absolutely eat it up, and sometimes even more so than the actual service member or the family member who is with that person eat it up, because they know how much their family member sacrificed. I encourage you all to do that. What I also encourage you not to do is don't be a fucking asshole when it comes to politics. This week, President Trump helped out a young Marine. I don't even want to say helped him out. He picked up a Marine's cover, his hat, whenever it flew off because he was standing underneath HMX-1. President Trump did the humane thing. He did the human thing. He did the nice person thing, helped the young Marine out, picked it up, placed it back on top of his head, gave him a pat on the shoulder. That is a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice moment for the president to have. If you're a lefty like me, I'm a liberal dude. It's no secret. Don't fucking complain about that stuff. Like, don't try to find a way out of it to say that that was a nice thing to do. It was a nice thing to do. If you can't say that, you're a fucking idiot. Like, you have no place in discourse because you can't compliment anybody on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, if you're on the right side, if you're on the very right side, take that moment for what it is to show that President Trump does have some humanity. Don't crop a picture of him doing that and do halfway through and put President Obama holding a cup of coffee while he goes by a Marine who has his cover on, because you look like a fucking idiot too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just say that was a nice thing that President Trump did and be done with it.
Yeah,
it
take it for what it is.
It has to be left or right.
Agreed. Agreed. And credit to that Marine for maintaining his military bearing. Obviously, he's not, the cover flies off. You just got to let it go. You don't say, "Oh, hold on, Mr. President, let me go get my cover." He stood there at attention.
There.
Right as he should have, and even when the president was making the attempts and then it flew off again, that was actually kind of funny because he was trying everything to get that cover back on that Marine, and obviously then the other, I think it was an Air Force officer eventually got the cover for him. But nonetheless, I take that for what it was, and all it was just a nice moment. That's what it was. It was a nice moment.
People take these presidential moments, and this is going to kind of come off as like hypocritical, because what I do, like being a full-time Barstool guy, is we got to chase likes, we chase retweets, we chase social moments and things like that. But you don't have to do that and be an asshole. Mm-hmm. Our next guest is going to come on and talk about another situation that happened this week where somehow, some way, an article, a series of articles about a football player who played quarterback, became a lieutenant, one of your buddies, Connor, one of your former students and players, he died. Chase died, and they brought back, I have to think they brought back the links for likes. I have to.
I would hope not, but I do think that's probably what happened. Yeah, Lieutenant Chase Prasnicki, what was interesting, here, this is a great example. You reached out to me and said, oh, we definitely have to talk about that West Point football player who was killed. And I said, and I knew what you were talking about right away because someone else had mentioned it to me already. And I said, no, actually, that kid, unfortunately, he was killed 5 years ago. But for some reason, everything is now recirculating on Facebook. I don't know why, but it is. And now a bunch of people are running with it. And now people are sharing the link. And they're retweeting it and sharing it for likes and such. And what I liked about you, though, Chaps, and I thought this was a great move, you said, you know what? That doesn't matter. Let's take it as an opportunity to talk about some of the good things and good stories about them, and that's why we had on our next guest.
Yeah, and I think that it worked out well. It's nice to have those moments when the distinction probably was a little bit shitty of why it happened, but we want to tell the story of Chase because it's a great story, a great young dude who loved crushing beers, loved his fucking country, and loved leading men and women into combat. Here we go.
All right, now joining us is a pal of mine, Carson Williams, 2010 graduate of West Point, former football player, former...
This is the first time we've talked about West Point on this podcast.
I can always just do nothing but laugh when you say those things. But the reason we wanted to have Carson on, as we were just mentioning, we were talking about Lieutenant Chase Prasnicki, who was killed in Afghanistan, and how his story has resurfaced recently. We thought we'd bring on Chase's best friend, kind of share some good memories about a tough soldier and a great guy. So, Carson, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite, Connor. Appreciate you guys inviting me on. Yeah, so Chase and I, I'll share a few memories of it, but we first met back in 2006. You know how it is, the basic training that Beast Barracks, everything's kind of going crazy. And I'll never forget it. That kid throughout Beast Barracks got yelled at more than anybody else around. Listen, he couldn't do anything right. But the worst part was the stuff that he would do was so funny that you'd start laughing at him and then you'd get in trouble too. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you were both sitting there doing push-ups. But, yeah, so Chase and I, we started our relationship off in Beast Barracks 2006. Recruited for the same position of quarterback. I ended up being workout buddies, a couple years in. He majored in operations research. I was a systems engineering major. So with the exception of like three or four different classes, we had kind of the same track and, many of the same classes. We'd do a lot of the homework together. He invited me over to his family's house a few different times. He ended up staying down in Alabama where I was from. Ended up graduating both branch field artillery, spent some time at the prep school together. And, as you mentioned, share a few memories. One in particular, and this is probably my favorite. We ended up junior year taking a group field trip or a group spring break down to Acapulco, Mexico. And, it was all...
Whoa. They let you guys do that?
Yeah, we get spring break. It's just college, man.
Yeah.
They let you go to Mexico?
Yeah.
Marines aren't allowed to go to Mexico on active duty.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, dude. I think we just get in so much fucking trouble that you're just like, nope. I'm sorry. That just blew my mind.
That's
no
probably
Marines
for the
San
best.
San Diego's are allowed to go to Mexico.
Well, based on the story Carson's about to tell, maybe it was probably best that we shouldn't have went there anyway. But anyway, Carson, right. Go ahead.
Hey, well, listen, it's the same, not Chase specific, but during that trip, and this is probably why they don't let us go anymore, we ended up staying at this, it was a Spring Breakers hotel. Third night there, some drunk guy was on there, ended up throwing a pillowcase or a pillow that was on fire down the laundry chute, burned all the clothes in the laundry chute, ended up catching fire on the first couple of floors, and then burned smoke all the way up to the 20th floor. The whole thing had to be evacuated. You had, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. You had just people just shit-faced, blackout drunk, stumbling down the stairs, screaming and yelling, we're all going to die. And so, hey, yeah, no joke. That was half of us. Six of us, 12 all went all. The six that were in that hotel had to bunk with the other six. We were sleeping two to a bed for a week down there. But that's a true story. But anyway, so while we were down there, this is probably the most memorable Chase memory that kind of circulates the table when we start talking about Chase. We were down there. We probably had one too many Dos Equis one day, and they were offering banana boat rides pulled behind a Sea-Doo for $80. Yeah. So you could fit four guys on there for $20 a piece, and they'd take you around the island. Out in the middle of the ocean, mind you. So we all get on there. All of us is, you know, hold the beer, hold on to each other, thinking we're hot shit. And Chase is on the back. Well, about halfway out in the middle of the ocean, can't even see people on land. Chase has this brilliant idea that he's going to jump off and do a backflip. So off the banana boat he goes, does a backflip. We start laughing, cheering him on, trying to flag down this guy that's driving the Sea-Doo. And, you know, he didn't speak any English. We're sitting there waving him down. This guy makes it all the way back, over a mile, back to the beach where we left. Chase is still out there in the middle of the ocean. He's still out there in the middle of the ocean. We can't even see this kid anymore. And, you know, at first we were kind of laughing, but now we kind of start to get a little worried. We have to get somebody to come translate to this guy that, hey, one of our guys fell off back there, and he's sitting out there. So they assemble this posse together, and like three of them get on the Sea-Doo, go out after him, still pulling this banana boat, this empty banana boat. And they're gone for 5 or 10 minutes, still nothing. And I kid you not, Chase Prasnicki comes strolling up on a fishing boat. You guys seen the Captain Morgan stance?
Yeah.
He's got his front leg poked up on the front of this fishing boat. Drinking double fisting Coronas.
That's awesome.
Double fisting Coronas. Comes up, jumps in about waist deep, walks up, and we were like, you know, what happened, man? And it's like, listen, I don't know. I flagged down these fishermen. They don't speak English, but we both speak beer.
That's fantastic. And so, yeah. I mean, Carson, I met you and Chase both because I was fortunate enough to stick around as a grad assistant coach. And can you just tell the story of where his nickname came from with old Coach Eddie Wilson?
Yeah, this is another good one. So, yeah, I mean, everybody that knows Chase, Chase was a very intense guy. He was hyper-focused, always present in the moment. He certainly wanted to be the best in everything he tried. High energy. I mean, being his workout partner for 4 years is a chore. This kid would sit there and kill the workout and then work out after. So it just kind of goes to, you know, the testament of who he was as a person and his work ethic. But, you know, this is just how he got his name, yep, Nitro. We were sitting right after Beast Barracks, sitting upstairs watching film one day. Coach Eddie Wilson, you know, if you don't know Eddie, he's an old conservative, typical conservative, old school quarterback coach. Had the bushiest eyebrows I've ever seen in my life.
That's true.
And was sitting there. He was walking us through film. You know, this was the first time we had gotten together as a unit, all the quarterbacks. And Chase and I, fresh out of the Beast Barracks, don't know anybody in the room. I'm kind of nervous. Certainly aren't as savvy when it comes to the plays. But we sit down, we start watching film. Well, this quarterback coach, Eddie, says he misplaces his glasses. The lights have been turned off. So he says, Chase, if you don't mind, will you run, you know, turn on the lights on real quick? Well, Chase, you know, being his hyperactive self, jumped up, crawled across the table, sprinted to the light, flicked it on, ran back to his seat. I mean, you know, it's kind of odd in and of itself, but this kid was sprinting in the, you know,
in the meeting room, yeah.
In the meeting room with chairs, knocking people over.
Just to turn the damn light on.
Yeah, to turn the light on. And Coach found his glasses and said, all right, Chase, you can turn it off now. jumped back up, did the same thing. And, you know, we got Dave Pivito, Kevin Dunn, a couple of different people in there that they don't know us. We don't know them. And they're looking at Chase, just bewildered. Poor guy. And Eddie notices him now that he's got his glasses on. And he's kind of puzzled, sits there and looks at Chase, and he says, "You got a lot of energy, don't you, buddy?" Chase says, "Yes, sir." Eddie says, "I think I'm going to call you Nitro."
And Nitro was born. And that stuck. Yeah. That stuck. I mean, that was his name, known by everybody on the team. He was just Nitro from there on out.
All 4 years, yeah. Even
it is a great nickname, though. That's not a shitty nickname.
No, that's a great nickname. That's American Gladiators right there.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, no, so that's a great nickname. And then I think it just speaks to Chase's character. You know, unfortunately, when his life was taken, he was only in country 3 days, and he just he took that energy, and he was learning the new AO. He was taking over for a unit, and 3 days into it, he just jumped at the opportunity to go on a mission that he didn't have to go on. And he left a lot of his guys behind, and he went on it himself with the other unit and unfortunately hit a roadside bomb. But I think that just speaks to his character and his willingness and his wanting to be the best leader. He was so eager to
move on, I want to dive into that just a little bit.
Sure.
To show like the kind of character for people listening that don't know what that kind of thing entails. Whenever you first get to country, you have like a left seat, right? And for to be a young lieutenant like he was and to go out and have as much gumption and to want to get to know the area as best as he could, and you know it's for his guys or girls or whoever it is, for his troops, it's pretty remarkable, and it's exactly what you want out of your leadership. Like, if I'm the staff sergeant working there, if I'm the company gunny there, and I see my young lieutenant is itching at the bit to go out there and do everything that he possibly can, that's the type of dude that you run through fucking walls for. That's a young, like, Dick Winters in the making. You know, like,
yeah,
the guy that just wants to go out there and fucking do it, that wants to be the example of how you should get it done. I'm going to go first. I'm going to do it. I'm going to risk life and limb. And it just sucks that 3 days into it, he lost his life on something that's like a roadside bomb. It's really shitty.
Yeah. And listen, I talked to a couple of different soldiers of his, and every single one of them said the same thing. You know, he was an awesome junior officer. To be have as little the little experience that he did, he knew how to listen to his men, what they were saying, knew how to take information and utilize it, and was just very well respected by all of his unit. And you know, this comes from guys that I met later on in the service that said, "Yep, I remember that guy." You know, he wasn't in my company, but everybody knew him, and they would just speak to his character. This was a kid that was just a brilliant guy, dedicated to some really, really solid values, and certainly on track to change the world positively. It's just unfortunate that you know, he graduated so soon.
Right, right.
And it's always great to hear stories like the one on him, Banana Boat, coming back double fisting, because that kind of shit gets lost in the shuffle. Like, if you Google his name right now, it's all these gallant things. But for everybody who knew his life story before the 3 days that he was in Iraq, that's who he was. He was the goofy guy that's going to come up double-fisted, speaking the only language that he knows how in Mexico, which is beer. That's who the kid was. Yeah. Like, that's him. And we're glad that you got to come on and share that and put that out there, especially when a cycle of news where things are just trying to get clicks, his story comes back up. It could be painful for his family, too, to have to go through that and dredge up those memories. So we're glad that you came on and did some positive shit. Anything else you want to tell us about Chase?
No, listen, guys, I appreciate you inviting me on. It's probably a good thing. You know, it's been a while since I thought about some of those good memories, so I appreciate it.
Help, 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 right, help. Left, 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 right, left.
Heavy episode talking about some Band of Brothers. We're finally done with Band of Brothers. Next week we'll come back with some Save Rock and alibis about some little tidbits that I've been reading in Major Winter's book. I know Cons has read it too.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that a little bit. Not too long. We're going to get back into our normal flow. Probably still skipping out on politics just because I'm fucking burned out on it, dude. Like, I don't want to talk about it that much.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like what we've been doing, and I think listeners have liked it as well. And Chaps and I have actually discussed getting into some other series, not necessarily just a movie or a television series, but almost like a discussion series, so to speak, whether that's famous generals, famous battles, things of that nature.
Yeah, the series has been fun. So if you guys want to hit me up at Chaps at Barstool or Cons at Barstool, right?
Yep.
Cons at Barstool. Do that and tell us what kind of series we want to talk about. We'll talk about leadership. We'll talk about wars. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about, because series is kind of a cool way for you guys to get involved as well. Last thing, the song that you heard to bring us into the show is going to be the same song that brought us out, because I was really, really moved by the 101st story. As a Marine, it's not easy for me to say that I have a lot of admiration for Army guys. It's just not. But that group was fucking badasses. So we're going to close out the show. It's Connor, save round alibis. You got any?
Yeah, actually, I got just two quick ones. Number one, did you see Belichick's T-shirt?
Yeah.
That was a great T-shirt. And then the other thing, I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to strictly because of how you responded to what I said when I said it. I got word that during some training, some cadets at West Point ingested C4 for whatever reason. I don't know, because that's not smart.
But then
you told me what? I was like, oh, I told you this, expecting you to say like, oh, what idiots. And then you said what?
I used to eat it all the time, C4 all the time. And then I would put pepper spray, like the OC spray on pizza, like we all did. It's just what you kind of do. But you wouldn't know about that.
I'll leave it at that.
I hope people eating C4 becomes our folks running over people with golf carts. I hope it goes viral. I hope you open up your little C4. But be careful, because those bomb techs and the ammo storage guys, they weigh it in. Eventually, you can eat so much that they're going to know something's missing. And that shit's expensive if you have to pay for it. Sound the retreat.
And then a trooper's life for me. A jumper like my daddy was is all I want to be. I only hope that I can jump just half as well as he.
He ain't gonna jump no more. Oh, glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die.
Sent him to Afghanistan and then into Iraq. The bullet that came speeding out went deep into his back. He hit the ground, but his grenade found enemy on track.
He ain't gonna jump no more. Oh, glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You know what? I think you and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.